Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 22 for April 20th, 2007. Silverlight. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Engage, an enhanced start menu replacement that gives you fast and easy access to all your most used items. Download your free trial at thebestwaytostart.com. It's time for Windows Weekly, our regular trip down the lane of Redmond. Redmond Lane with Paul Thurrott. Paul is, of course, the news editor for Windows IT Pro and runs the Win Supersite, Supersite for Windows at winsupersite.com. And his own blog at internet-nexus.com. And we have some good stuff to talk about today, including the DoubleClick Google, the Google acquisition of DoubleClick for $3.1 million. Silverlight, which is Microsoft's flash killer. In fact, we can talk about the Microsoft-Adobe rivalry in general. What happened to Windows Live? Some things are missing. And the Wonder Patch for Outlook 2000. We'll do all that in just a second. But first, let's remind you this show is brought to you by Engage. I have been playing with Engage all week, Paul, and it's so cool. Isn't it cool?
Yeah, I like it.
I particularly recommend it for XP because it keeps
it's absolutely aimed at XP.
Yeah.
And it really, really works well. And if you ever looked at Vista and wish you could have had some of that stuff, or even beyond what Vista does, absolutely.
It's an enhanced start menu replacement. It gives you easy access to all your items. The same way Vista does, you type the first few letters and you can find all of the items very quickly, but also web pages. Documents, large icons. In fact, they've got a really great team Engage where people contribute categories because it automatically categorizes your start menu, which means your start menu is no longer this crazy, disengaged, weird thing. It's engaged. I really like it. It's now free for the next 30 days if you go to thebestwaytostart.com. Thebestwaytostart.com. And if you like it, I think it's like $20. It's very reasonable. You will like it, I promise you. It's a great way to take your start menu and engage it. Works in Windows Vista, too, and adds some nice features to a Windows Vista as well. That is thebestwaytostart.com. And I've put it on all my machines now. You can try it free for 30 days because it just really makes it. And I love the big icons, too. I mean, it's just because I'm kind of.
I think we talked about this. I spend so much time fine-tuning my start menu, and in Windows Vista, it's a nightmare because with user account control, you have to authorize every single
time. Are you sure you want to do that?
I mean, if you move anything in the start menu or delete a folder, God. Yeah, good luck with your sanity on that one.
You should join Team Engage. Because what they do is if you've got an application that isn't properly categorized, doesn't get categorized at all, you can then, on Team Engage, you can submit and the fix, and I think you get free, big, better deals or even free versions of the software and stuff. So it's very cool. But they did a good job organizing my system. Did a really good job right out of the box. Anyway, we welcome them to the show and thank him for bringing us the show. You'll see a banner on the website, or you can just go to thebestwaytostart.com. Let's talk about... I thought it was a lot to pay $1.6 billion for YouTube. Google paid $3.1 billion in cash.
But I actually, DoubleClick is a company with a history and they make money. So,
there's a difference right there.
YouTube was a little curious to me, especially given its sort of Napster of video reputation. But
so you're not amazed at how much they paid for DoubleClick, but at how much they paid for YouTube. You think DoubleClick was a deal?
It's expensive to own a monopoly, Leo.
Well, monopoly is the word Microsoft's using. I think it's kind of interesting. Microsoft is saying, hey, we're worried about the competitive aspects of this. This could be a problem.
Is this pot kettle black kind of thing?
I think so. But Microsoft was in the bidding, weren't they, for the...
They were, and I think it was Yahoo and I want to say Time Warner.
Yes, Time Warner, that's right.
We're in the bidding there. Yeah, $3.1 billion in cash, by the way.
Unbelievable.
It's not stock. It's not anything. Yeah, strange. It's money, it's money. And presumably the guys at DoubleClick are literally rolling around naked on the money right now.
I certainly would be, but maybe that's just but, now they have to get regulatory approval. And I think that's one thing Microsoft's angling to maybe say this shouldn't be approved.
Right. Now, and I wrote something about this today as a sort of a news item, and I've gotten some feedback, let's say, from people. And obviously, for a certain crowd of people, the notion of Microsoft complaining about anyone else having a monopoly is a bit of a stretch. But actually, you know, they have a responsibility to shareholders, and certainly this is something they should complain about. I mean, aside from the cynical nature of, yes, who better than Microsoft to understand what a monopoly is and so forth. Yeah, there I could see where there might be some concerns there. I would compare this to when Microsoft tried to buy Intuit about a decade ago, and they were blocked by the federal government because of monopoly concerns. And this is very similar to that. You know, Google basically has a lock on what I would call search advertising, right? You know, the advertising that appears in search results and so forth. DoubleClick is that more, and it's funny to say this, but sort of traditional web advertising. I don't know how else to put that, but
The banner, you know, ads you see everywhere.
Yeah, the other ads, right, you know, right. Everything else. Right. So,
the thing, ironically, Google was trying to do differently and better with plain text and context-sensitive ads. Interesting that they want to buy DoubleClick. Maybe it's because of DoubleClick's relationships. They sell ads to some of the biggest websites in the country.
Yeah, yeah. No, well, I mean, clearly those are the two big areas on the web to make money. So, yeah, no, I understand why Microsoft is complaining about this, and I don't see this as ironic or anything else. I mean, I think it makes sense that they would do this.
Brad Smith, who's the Senior Vice President and General Counsel of Microsoft, wrote, "This proposed acquisition raises serious competition and privacy concerns." Oh, interesting. Privacy, too. "We think this merger deserves close scrutiny from regulatory authorities to ensure a competitive online advertising market." I have to say, I agree with him on the privacy issue. With what DoubleClick knows about us from following us around with their DoubleClick cookie, and Google knows about us, the two combined, I think they're pretty scary.
Yeah, and you know, this is another topic entirely, but I honestly felt this way for a little while now, although I have to say I use Google products every single day. I mean, it's only a matter of time before we all sort of wake up and say, well, wait a minute, what are we doing here? You know, we're trusting this one company with all this information. And
there's something about them that seems trustworthy.
Yeah. I don't know.
Seems is the operative word,
thank you.
Though.
I would say so. There's some dirty dealing there. There's the stuff with the Chinese and the deals they did there. There's something that you may say is a small thing, but if you look at the end-user license agreement for their phishing filter, it basically says, we will use this information that you've provided us. I mean, it makes no bones about it, you know.
Right.
I don't know. So I'm not saying I believe 100% that this deal should be blocked, but you know, I don't think we know enough about it yet. But Microsoft should complain, and the U.S. government, I think, should look into it, and we'll see what they decide, I guess.
Right. Great. We will find out, and it may take a while. I mean, these things don't happen overnight, and I'm sure we'll hear more from not just Microsoft, but Time Warner, Yahoo, and everybody else in this.
You could make a career of just following the legal problems of these various companies. Yeah, I mean,
no kidding. Microsoft also announced Flashlight. What is it? Silverlight?
Silverlight.
What is it?
Flashlight would have been a great name. Silverlight.
Oh, maybe that's intentional, isn't it? Because it's a competitor to Flash.
Right.
Do you
it's
think
not
they
a flash in the pan.
Do you think they did that on purpose?
No.
Oh.
No, I don't know. Probably. Actually, I think Silverlight's kind of a strange name. You know, Microsoft.
It sounds a little. Lord of the Ringsy.
It does. Yeah.
Welcome to Silverlight.
Right. It's like an EverQuest online.
Exactly.
Org.
So what is it?
Yeah. What is it? Yeah. Well, it's basically a Flash-like, you know, web plugin type thing. It doesn't require anything on the server backend, and it's basically a simple way for web designers to incorporate video and animation into their web content. You know, Microsoft will push the standards that it is based on. It's vector-based. It actually supports up to 720p video, which is, you know, HDTV, and increasingly less rare, but a fairly rare move for Microsoft. It's compatible with all the major browsers, including Apple Safari, which I have to think they just did to shut those guys up.
But, well, you know, but if you're going to compete with Flash, I mean, that is really the single biggest advantage of Flash is it plays everywhere. In fact, you really have to do a Linux version too, I think, if you're going to compete with Flash.
Interesting.
Any word of a Linux version?
That I do not know. And, you know, when this story arrived, I actually decided not to write about it in the newsletter until a day later because I wanted to sort of investigate it. But my sort of quick overview of it suggested it was macOS and Windows, but I will have to go look at that. You know, there's a standard for next generation DVDs called VC1, right? You made this video codec that Windows Media Video is part of, as is MPEG-4. And so forth. So there's also some talk that this might be a QuickTime competitor as well, because you could just use it to deliver video, you know, right. and very high quality video, very high resolution video.
Well, if that's the case, then you're going to have a shooting war because Adobe announced this week its own QuickTime competitor, an enhanced version of Flash that in fact has many of those media playback features, and
that's right with the video controls. And actually that's a huge problem with Flash today. I think anyone would agree with that.
Well, and this will be higher quality too, which is another complaint. How is the quality on Silverlight? Have you seen Silverlight at work?
No, I haven't. You know, Microsoft has been working on this stuff for a long, long time. I mean, I want to say it must have been PDC 2005, so October 2005, about 18 months ago. They showed some of this stuff off to developers. They showed the development tools, like the Expression suite of products, some of which are out now, are all compatible with this. So there's I don't know the name of it, Expression Designer, or one of the Expression Graphic Designer, perhaps, is the client-side tool where you can create the content that will be delivered via Silverlight. It's finally starting to roll out. And Microsoft, of course, has a web development show coming up called Mix. And presumably there'll be more information about it there as well.
Silverlight. So you could very soon be doing Silverlight production.
I'm not going near this, but you mean in general.
Not you.
Yeah.
You, Paul Thurrott.
I can see a dog from a mile away. No.
Well, look, they got Major League Baseball, and Netflix is saying they're going to use it.
Okay, but if you want to look at, say, the selection of companies that signed up as part of the channel bar for IE4.
Oh, yeah, that. I remember that.
Pretty sure that's not really supported anymore either. So.
Whatever happened to that?
God knows, Invista, there's probably a way to turn it on.
Oh, hell no channel bar. I forgot, all those active desktop technologies and all that stuff and the content.
It's all about push technology.
Push. It's the next big thing, you know.
That's what I read.
Ironically, they weren't far off. I mean, that's really what RSS is. That's what podcasting is.
But it's they had RDF, right? Was their sort of semi-proprietary way of delivering this stuff.
Right, right.
It never really kicked in.
They were a little early, that's all.
That's Microsoft. They're always on the leading edge.
Do you think this is a natural rivalry, this Adobe-Microsoft rivalry? I mean, they're more and more head-to-head, aren't they?
Yeah, increasingly, right? And it's funny that you said that the QuickTime thing, because I had never considered that as well. Adobe now is getting some pushback on the Apple side as well.
That's right.
Adobe makes high quality products. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. I mean, that between PDF and the Photoshop stuff and all that, I mean, you know, this is a big deal. But as far as Microsoft is concerned, I think that their XML paper specification format, that XPS format that was in Vista and Office 2007 was one, maybe the first shot in this little war. Microsoft has some Photoshop type things, including a free, the free paint.net program, but also some of the Expression stuff, which is aimed at graphic designers. And now we have this. And
interesting. Very interesting. Yeah.
I mean, I think Microsoft might look at Adobe as if they were Netscape or Google and say, we work together occasionally, but
I think what it tells you is, I mean, I think you've got three players here. You've got Microsoft, you've got Apple, and you've got Adobe, and they're not battling for the operating system space. Obviously, that's not Adobe's interest, but they are battling for kind of dominance of web technologies. In particular.
Yeah, right. And you can see how they're approaching it, too, because from Microsoft's standpoint, if you pummel everyone down with something that's part of Windows, Windows remains ubiquitous and is the platform of the future. But from the standpoint of a company like Adobe, where they don't make the operating system, their deal is, look, we don't know what's going to happen in the future if we're going to go to some sort of web-based OS, or, you know, if maybe Windows becomes less important over time and these applications and services that we use in the cloud are more important. So, you know, they tend to be more open to other platforms and so forth. And it's interesting because those two approaches to computing have really been at odds for quite a long time. So this is almost like another chapter in the same story in some ways.
Right, right, right. We also noticed, Mary Jo Foley wrote about it in her blog, that some things had disappeared, mysteriously disappeared at Windows Live. I like Windows Live. And I feel like many of the products at Windows Live are under-promoted and really are really good.
They have an identity problem.
They do. You know?
Windows Live, of course, came out of MSN. I mean, a lot of
that's
the original
part of the problem, services, I might add.
Yeah. And they, you know, MSN had a decent brand, I guess. I mean, I appreciate them wanting to brand it as Windows and make it seem like part of a cohesive whole and so forth. But I think the thing that's sad about Windows Live is that, you know, when most of MSN became Windows Live, and there's actually some MSN stuff left today. They still have the portal. They have MSN Video and probably some other things, MSN Radio, et cetera. Most of the services, though, and most of the applications that they were making became, you know, Windows Live products. And I was really, really nervous that the Windows Live group, you know, the guys that used to be out at Red West are probably still out at Red West on the Microsoft campus, would kind of get subsumed by that giant gorilla of Windows and just be stomped down. You know, the hope on the other side was that the Windows Live guys would inject some enthusiasm and some life into Windows.
Right, right.
And maybe hope those guys release things more quickly and not be as staid and slow moving as they were in the past.
I think we have a victor.
I do too. Yeah. And David got stepped this time.
It ain't good. It ain't good for the Windows Live guys. So,
yeah.
So what's missing? What's going away?
Well, right. So I get apparently about a year ago, someone had done a count of the various Windows Live services and products, and there were 40 of them. And by the way, that's another problem with Windows Live.
Yeah, you can't tell. Well,
there's way too much of this stuff.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Not only that, but Microsoft has a really bad habit of seemingly copying every single thing that Google does.
Right.
And I'm not saying that that's true every step along the way, but you know, if you visit the various Google pages, you'll see, you know, beta, 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 beta of whatever. And it seems like every time they announce something, Microsoft comes out with it the next day. You know,
right.
Oh, we're going to do Windows Live Book Search.
Right.
You know, we're going to do the same thing, you know. So I think that's part of the problem with Windows Live, you know, maybe that they need to hone that down a little bit. And maybe that's what we're seeing, because apparently this list of Windows Live products and services has fallen from 40 to 30. And some of them have moved to a beta page, which, of course, at Google is just their regular page, but
right.
Whatever. Some have actually dropped the Windows name.
Huh.
So we have things like Live Maps or Live Q&A, Live Search, and Live.com, all of which are not really branded as Windows.
Huh.
But some of them are just gone. And that might just be a temporary situation, but things like Windows Live Academic Search, Mary Jo Foley pointed out, Windows Live Book Search, and Windows Live Search Translation had literally just disappeared. So maybe we're seeing a consolidation. Maybe we're seeing a transition. I think everyone at Microsoft is very well aware that Windows Live is not doing well. You know, their share of the search market in particular has actually dropped dramatically in the past year, which is, I'm pretty sure, not what they were looking for.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt about it. I mean, there's something about Google, as much as I do believe in deep down that they are inherently evil in some ways. I mean, the Google search page in particular is very simple. And fast and accurate and so forth. And, you know, if you ever go to live.com and you do a Windows Live search, you can look at it and see that they have so many things in there that are really neat features. But in some ways, it just seems like they're piling stuff on, you know, and it's just not as elegant. So I just don't see it. Well, to the point, by the way, and you probably saw this item in the past few weeks, you know, they're going to pay corporations to use it.
Right.
You know, they're going to set up a metering system, and as users at these companies actually use Windows Live Search, Microsoft will give them credits toward the purchases of Microsoft software and services.
Yeah.
Yikes. Yikes.
Wow.
So, yeah, I feel bad about Windows
Live. Yeah, because you're friends with these guys. I mean, from going back to the original
MSN.
MSN.
There's stuff in Windows today. If you look at Windows Sidebar, as far as that kind of thing, where it's sitting on the edge of the screen, and it, you know, it isn't, of course, what it could have been in Longhorn, but you know, they were looking at doing notifications that would be system wide and also for third party applications. That stuff actually all dates back to MSN, and it goes back to an MSN client that is still floating around, but they don't really upgrade it anymore. Where they had a sidebar, it actually was called a dashboard. But it sat there on the side, and you could see who was online in your buddy list. You could see how many emails you had. You could see what the weather was going to be and all that stuff. And a lot of stuff has come out of this, but for some reason, you know, they just haven't really – they haven't done the ass-kicking that I thought they would do. You know, it's too bad.
It is too bad because I think there's some really neat things in there. They just eclipsed by the success of Google and – and, yeah. And, you know, it's just hard to beat. I mean, I see where Microsoft's starting to freak.
Right? And it's not just Microsoft, too. I mean, you can look at something like Yahoo, and, you know, Yahoo has an amazing new email client. It's beautiful.
Oh, yeah. It's Outlook, basically.
Yeah, yeah, on the web, and it's gorgeous. And it's a million times nicer than Gmail, but and they're doing everything they can, right? They just announced, you know, 2 gigabytes, 4 gigabytes. No, we're going to give you unlimited storage for the rest of your life for free. And, you know, no one's going to use this thing. Right, you can just feel it. And it's too bad.
Tough to compete. Very tough.
Yeah.
Did you read Paul Graham's Microsoft is Dead blog post?
Yes. Yeah, I did. I did.
What'd you
and
think
I responded
that?
To it on my blog.
And by the way, that was one of the things that he said was that Google, you know, there were four reasons why Microsoft is dead. And one of them is Google.
Do you have the list in front of you? Because I can probably do this off the top of my head, because I really feel like he got some stuff wrong there, but I'll look it up.
Well, you can go through it. I have it. Yeah.
First of all, you know, I don't know if it was him or someone who was trying to defend him had said something to the effect of, you know, he wasn't really saying Microsoft is dead. He was trying to say, you know, they were like a dinosaur on the way out. And that's a not so subtle restructuring of what he wrote. I mean, I think he was literally saying that, you know, there's a line in the sand and they've crossed over it. And
he's saying it's all over for Microsoft.
Yeah, and that's absolutely not true.
It's pretty hard. I mean, he also said it in the same way it's all over for IBM, and clearly that would come as a shock to IBM.
There's a big difference between companies that make a lot of money, which, by the way, both IBM and Microsoft do, and companies that are perceived as cool by technology people, like you and I, maybe.
Right.
In other words, we can all look at Apple and even Google, and we can say, wow, those are really cool companies. And by the way, they both make a lot of money, but... I don't believe that either one of them makes as much money as Microsoft.
We should mention, by the way, that Paul, while I think Paul is a brilliant commentator, mm-hmm. Paul Graham, and I've read his stuff, and he's the guy who created, you know, who really got Bayesian filtering started in the mm-hmm. sense mm-hmm. of way.
Oh, no, the things I thought he got wrong, I believe, you know, the number one was Google, right? Google, absolutely. I don't think you can make much of an argument. If you believe, as I do, and I believe that you do as well, that we're in the middle of a transition to a new... style of computing. I think that we'll always have, for the foreseeable future, we'll have desktop operating systems. And for certain things, you know, Microsoft Office, you'll always want that kind of functionality. And it's just not really possible today, although, you know, maybe we'll get there, where you could deliver something that fully functional over the web on the fly, you know.
Right.
Regardless.
So the four reasons he thinks it's
dead. Google is number one.
Google's, as said, it's the most obvious number one.
And I think we agree with that, right? I mean...
Oh, that's certainly the number one competitor right now.
Yeah. Number two...
Ajax.
Ajax, which, by the way, Microsoft helped create.
Yeah, DHTML came from Microsoft.
And the thing that bugs me about this one is he actually points to Gmail as one of the great examples of Ajax. And we were just talking about Yahoo Mail as a much better web application than Gmail, as far as not just looks, but also functionality.
I agree. I love it.
I'm not sure that I don't see Ajax killing Microsoft. I mean, Ajax is something that Microsoft could do a better job of integrating into its you know, product line, so that you have Ajax-based versions of some of the, say, Office services or whatever it might be. But that's to me, that's part of Google. I mean, it's sort of like this online shift that is causing problems for Microsoft. Google is maybe the one big company because they're making lots of money. But, you know, I don't, you know, Microsoft has an Ajax Hotmail client that I would argue is probably as capable as Gmail. You know, whatever.
Right.
I don't know.
Right. The problem with Hotmail, by the way, mm-hmm. is the name.
is the name.
A problem?
Yeah.
The name is Hotmail.
The name is Hotmail. I mean, does anybody who wants a credible email address and your choice is between Yahoo.com, Gmail.com, or Hotmail.com?
So you're saying it's the new AOL?
Yes.
In that capacity.
It's the
and
name.
The other thing that's weird about that is, you know, of course, they were going to change the name of this. They were going to give it live.com email addresses.
They should have.
The new version. They still might. But they actually decided to brand the thing Windows Live Hotmail.
Dumb.
Instead of Windows Live Mail. And they blew it. Yeah. They should have called it Live Mail.
Live Mail. Although live is a little weird, too. Hi, I'm Leo at live.com. I don't know. That sounds a little weird. It's hard, you know, anyway, who knows? But it's better than Hotmail.
Better than Hotmail.
Hotmail sounds like something from 1995, let's face it. So Ajax is number two. Number three is broadband. Now, this is what you were talking about. Do people really want web-based applications, or would they prefer desktop applications?
Let's put it this way. Where broadband is today, and I have a Fios, you know, optical, what do you call that? Fiber optic.
You have Fios? Know. Oh, I'm so jealous.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's really just... cable modems can go as fast. I mean, in certain markets. I mean, right. it's comparable, right?
Right.
Where we are right now with broadband, if you want to describe state of the art consumer broadband as cable modem / Fios, for us to get to where we have to be, where Ajax and Google and broadband can combine together and deliver these applications as fast as Microsoft Office can locally. We have a quantum leap to make, not just in speed, but in the pervasive access to this service. I mean, it has to be wireless. It has to be everywhere.
Yeah.
It has to be completely error-free. And
Paul is saying, I think in some ways, this is the future. This is what's coming. I mean, Paul has really lived on the cutting edge. Maybe,
but there's nothing to prevent Microsoft from taking advantage of any of this stuff.
Right. Well, that's
Microsoft Microsoft benefits from broadband as well. They can deliver Windows Vista to you over the internet.
True. That's true.
Avoid the middleman.
They haven't had the greatest success at turning this stuff, though.
Oh, no, no doubt. But I'm just saying, just because they're not doing it today doesn't mean they're dead.
Well, and you're right. I mean, it's actually on the face of it ridiculous to say broadband is going to kill Microsoft because, as you point out, it doesn't. It's agnostic. It's not aimed at Microsoft. On the other hand, the fourth nail in the coffin, according to Paul Graham, is Apple.
Is Apple. And he completely botched this one. Because I agree that Apple deserves to be in the list. But he said it was because of the Mac. Come on.
Yeah.
Apple is killing Microsoft in digital media.
Yeah, he says Apple has Microsoft on the run in music, too, with TV and phones on the way.
Well, but almost as a throwaway.
Right.
And I think that sort of betrays his viewpoint or, where he's coming from, which is from a very tech-savvy consumer standpoint. He cares, like I do in some ways, about operating systems and the web and all this stuff. And it's like that other stuff to him is not interesting, so he doesn't include it in his list. I think that other stuff is a much bigger problem for Microsoft than Mac OS X. In some ways, the success of Mac OS X has helped Microsoft avoid further antitrust complications.
You could certainly make a strong case for that, absolutely.
Yeah.
On the other hand, he says at the end, I already know what the reaction to this essay will be. Half the readers will say, hey, Microsoft's still an enormously profitable company, and I should be more careful about drawing conclusions based on what a few people think in our insular little Web 2.0 bubble. The other half, the younger half, will complain, hey, this is old news. Everybody knows Microsoft is dead. I have to say, I'm kind of in his corner, but I think it's more wishful thinking. I don't mean wishful thinking. I want Microsoft to go away. It's more wishful thinking that on the other side of it, that the web and web-based applications and this open, free Web 2.0 economy will dominate.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say I want to kill Microsoft, but I do want to see the web take over. And I think it's a long way from doing that.
There's so much more going on here, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
He's trying to stave off criticism by just throwing out a few things and saying, I know you're going to say this, but Windows Office and Windows Server are Microsoft's three core businesses. They all generate billions and billions and billions of dollars. In fact, they probably all made $1 billion since we've started recording this podcast. I mean, they make a lot of money for Microsoft, and they keep doing it. But give Microsoft a little credit. They are doing things like, by the way, Xbox 360, which has had absolutely no success tying itself to the success of Windows in order to get ahead, right? But has done well in the market. Especially with the Xbox 360. you know, Windows Mobile, which, yeah, okay, that has tied itself to Windows on the client and the server, and maybe that is responsible for its success, but it's a logical place for them to go. And by the way, the Windows Live stuff, though, it certainly hasn't done well in the market. I think anyone who's looked at it objectively would agree that it's high quality stuff.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't, and then, you know, the expression stuff that we kind of talked about today, they're getting in, they just announced a flash killer, which is yet another way to deliver interactive content on the internet and so forth. I mean, this is not a company that's sitting still and rolling over.
No, I agree with you. I'm glad he wrote the article, though, because I think it does raise some very interesting points, whether you agree with them or not. I think it's...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, listen, this was the... this is like textbook, how do I get hits? You know?
Yeah. No kidding. Right. I've talked about it now on three different podcasts and my radio show.
Yeah. No, I felt compelled to respond to this in my blog. I mean, even though I knew going in it was pointless to do so. Because everyone could have an opinion about this, but there's no way to really, prove one way or the other that, you know, it is or isn't. But I don't think Microsoft is going to pull an IBM. I really don't. I mean, there may be a future where they become sort of, you know, an infrastructure type company and become very boring and maybe aren't the type of company that people like you and I will want to talk about in a podcast or write about on the web or whatever.
Right.
Maybe.
Right.
But that day is not coming anytime soon.
You can read more on Paul's website, paulgraham.com. It's an interesting article. Moving along, we were talking about how beautiful Yahoo Mail is. And, well, it's really, it's amazing. It's a Ajax-y clone. They bought, was it Outpost?
Or See, Outpost? I didn't know this. So this came from an acquisition.
Yeah, it was an acquisition, Outpost.
Ah, okay.
Which I loved. And it was, that's exactly what it was, kind of a DHTML-based...
It's so beautiful.
Version of Outlook.
Yeah.
Outlook itself has improved with a magic patch.
Yeah, that's how I think of it. It's like it's a magic mushroom.
That's wild. Now, what happened? It's a patch that went out this past week for Outlook 2000.
I think it shipped on the 13th or something. I found out about it Monday morning, and I actually had two guys IM me this morning and saying, did you download this thing? Because it's incredible. And I said, yeah, I did. You know, and... I didn't really think that Outlook 2000 was all that bad. I mean,
isn't for Outlook 2003 or Outlook 2007.
This is for Outlook 2007.
Oh,
I'm sorry. What did I say?
You said 2000. So it's the current Outlook.
It is 2007.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, good. All right.
I can't speak.
I said Outlook 2000, and you agreed with me. I apologize. So it's for the newest Outlook.
Right.
And it speeds it up like how much?
I wouldn't have mentioned this if this was for Outlook 2000.
But, well, I wasn't going to say anything, but I thought, okay.
Well, I don't know how much. I don't know. I mean, but, you know, in
noticeably.
My case. Whoops.
Noticeably.
Yeah. Sorry. I lost audio there for a second.
That's okay.
Noticeably. I mean, like twice as fast. You know, I have so much email, I don't really think much of it. I think that, you know, Outlook is, of course, it's slow. It's, you know, it's going to plod through all my email. But you put this thing on and restart Outlook and hello, you know, it's like you goosed the thing, you know? So, get this. If you have Outlook 2007, just go get this thing. It's crazy because it's not promoted as a performance patch or anything. You know, the thing should come with racing stripes or something.
Wow.
It's somehow related to the way that Outlook, does that, you know, under the cover indexing. Of all, you know, so we can search things very quickly.
Right.
And it's somehow also tied in some vague way to calendaring, I'm told. But, you know, when you download the thing, you'll just notice the whole thing feels zippier and it's fantastic.
That's exciting. All right.
How do you find this?
Yes. That's my next question. How do I get
rather it? Rather than give you a URL, you might be familiar that Microsoft has a knowledge base, you know, in their support website, and you can search for the knowledge base article. So I'll give you the number of that, and that will point you at the download. So the knowledge base number is
933-493.
Right. And it's an 8.3 megabyte download. It's very small. And actually, maybe I will make sure that means anything. So let's go to Microsoft.com.
So there is a Windows, there's an Office updater. If I have the Office updater or I've added it as I have to my regular updates, it should just update it. Yes?
You know, I don't know that because this isn't a serious, you know, security issue, it might not. I'm not positive. But if you go to support.microsoft.com and type in KB space this thing,
right,
the very first article that comes up in the list is the article describing it, describing what it does. And then it has a link where you can go and, you know, and that's one of those huge, horrible, you know, URLs that Microsoft creates, but you can go download it.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. Got to get it.
You'd think they would shout this to the skies, but I guess in a way they don't want to, because it would imply that it was slow before.
Right. it makes a huge difference. I think it's great. So, who knows? I'll find out a week from now that it, you know, blew away all my email or something. It is a Microsoft patch, but it seems like it's doing great. So
no, come on. It's a good thing. The new Ubuntu is here. Mm-hmm. 7.04 just came out, and I'm surprised you wanted to talk about this on the show, frankly. Why? This is a Windows show.
Right.
What is so exciting about the new version of Ubuntu?
It's free. No, it's...
That's a good start, yeah.
It's free and stuff. No, I think that, you know, Windows users tend to be a little insular.
Dismissive? You know,
you know, a decade ago or so when I started writing WinInfo, you know, one of the things I consciously decided I would do was look at the time, you know, Unix and Mac OS and so forth, as well as Windows, just so, you know, everyone sort of had an idea that this stuff was going on. And I just think it's interesting because when you look at the Linux market, Ubuntu is pretty much, for end users, you know, the place to go. It's friendly for Linux. It works really well. This particular version picks up some interesting features that might be relevant to Windows users, including ways to import certain Windows settings into Linux so that you can duplicate your environment. So things like wallpaper, and if you're running Firefox, it will take your bookmarks and so forth. It has some basic multimedia features that had been missing in previous releases, because one of the problems with Linux is it's open source, and even doing things like playing back DVD movies is typically not provided out of the box because
it's proprietary. Yeah,
you can't have an open source implementation of that. So it has some of that stuff.
Neat.
Yeah. So I think, you know, if I remember correctly, Ubuntu is basically, you know, two releases a year. So the version is 7.04. The 7 is for 2007. The 04 is for April. And then the next version presumably be what, you know, 7.10, I think, or something like that, will come 6 months down the road. So.
And this is Feisty Fawn is the code.
Yeah, they have cool code names.
I love the code name, Feisty Fawn.
Yeah. So I like Ubuntu. I like is it Mark Shuttleworth, the guy started this in Canonical and so forth. And I like the whole vibe. And, you know, if you're just interested in this kind of thing, there's no reason, you know, they have live CDs, so you can boot your system with the CD and just kind of look at the system without installing it. You can dual boot and so forth. But I'm not recommending that anybody, you know, go wholeheartedly to Linux per se. But it's also something nice for older PCs. So
that's where I recommend it. People call in the radio show and they say, well, I'm running Windows 98 or ME
what do I do?
And you know, Microsoft's not supporting it anymore. I said, well, here's a good choice.
And it's safer than that. It has a nice bundle of applications. You know, it comes with OpenOffice and so forth. It's also a good place just to look at, you know, Ubuntu is a really nice measuring stick or whatever of how the Linux market is improving and maturing over time. And it's really interesting, you know, the UI itself and, you know, the work that they're doing there. It's just interesting to me. So, you know, if you want to check this out, I think it's this is the one to look at. Yeah.
Or you could download some new Halo 2 maps and really have
on a completely different topic. You can sort of gain some insight into the wild and woolly ways of my mind by all over the map this stuff is. Oh, pardon the pun.
Paul gives me an outline ahead of time. That's how I knew where we were going next.
Right. I know. Well, it's funny because as you're listing this stuff out, I'm thinking, wow, I really did come up with this. What's wrong with me?
No, I love it. I love it. That's what this is. And that's what I call it. This weekly tour of Redmond, you know, the world of Redmond.
It's like it's like spewing and seeing what you had for breakfast.
You never know.
So this week Microsoft releases two new maps for Halo 2, which of course is an original Xbox game.
When is Halo 3 coming out?
Well, on May 16th, they're going to release a multiplayer beta, but you have to get into it somehow. So,
because I pre-ordered it, I'm ready, you know, to get it. when it comes
out. For Halo 3, the full thing.
Yeah.
So if you want to get in on the multiplayer beta, I believe, and I could be wrong, but I think the only way to do it now is to buy a copy of the game Crackdown, which is marked as, you know, we'll have a sticker on it saying, you know, if you buy this, you can play the beta.
But I don't want Crackdown.
You might want to crack down. Crackdown's pretty good.
It's a fun game, but it's, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because for a lot of people, spending $60 to get a game just so you can play the beta of Halo 3 is actually worth it.
Oh, yeah.
And when I did that, and I did it for that reason because I tried to get in other ways, I said, you know, I'll do it. I don't care. I mean, even if this game stinks, it's worth it for me. And the first time I played it, I thought it was terrible. But actually, I've gone and since completed quite a bit of it. And it's a good game.
It's kind of cell animation, not exactly super realistic.
No, it's kind of like an animated comic book.
Comic book. That's a good way to describe it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's fun. It's a little violent.
It's fine. It's not for the kids, even though it's a comic book. So it's sort of like a, what do you call comic books for adults? Graphical novel.
Yeah.
A graphic novel.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of thing. But it's got good action and it, you know, there's driving and jumping and
it's shooting. Kind of a little Grand Theft Auto, auto-esque.
Yeah, yeah. But it's way open and,
yeah, that's what people like about it. It's so you can go anywhere, do anything.
Yeah, and actually that was I think that was my problem with it originally. You drive into the city and what am I doing here? I don't understand. I could do this around my own neighborhood. No, except I don't run people over. And
no.
Well, not usually.
Not usually. Paul, pleasure to talk to you. I want to remind everybody to visit our great sponsor, Engage, and at least give it a try because I think you'll be very impressed with what Engage can do to your start bar, thebestwaytostart.com. And we will talk again next week more about things Windows and things Microsoft.
And, sounds good.
Thank you for joining us. Take care. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.